Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Buck Keeley. But before we get to Buck and we begin talking about gardening, I wanted to share a few of my thoughts, because we're moving into a very important electoral season, probably the most important one you've ever seen. And there's been a lot of criticism of some of Congressman Ron Paul's positions, such as the fact that he wants to legalize marijuana. Well, he doesn't want to legalize marijuana. He just doesn't want the federal government to have anything to say about it. This should be a state issue. The Constitution does not give the federal government the right to regulate the use of drugs. And if people want to do dumb things, that should be taken care of at the state level. Congressman Paul has refused to sign the Defense of Marriage Act. Doesn't mean that he's not in favor of the traditional marriage, but it is not a function of the federal government to say whether a person can or not be a homosexual. If you want to use the federal government to remedy every social problem, then you have no right to complain when we have federal medical care, when we have federal disability, when we have federal subsidies for everything that's going on today. If you believe in the Constitution, you want to limit the power of the federal government and have matters dealing with life, liberty, and property dealt with at the state level. I would also comment on the issue of his foreign policy. Congressman Paul doesn't want us to go to war with Iran. He thinks we ought to have a strong defense force for America, but we had no business going into Iraq, where we probably killed a million civilians, and it was all a mistake. Oh, shucks, it was just all a mistake that we thought they had weapons of mass destruction, and, well, and just last night, Michelle Bachmann challenged Congressman Paul because he is not concerned because Iran is developing nuclear weapons. And if you see this, and you can find it on the Internet, where she said the International Atomic Energy Commission has stated that Iran is working to build a nuclear weapon, and they may have one in a few months, and we have to stop them. And Congressman Paul said that isn't true. Well, she insists it was. But I would suggest you look up and see what the report said from the International Atomic Energy Commission. It said Iran may be working, and they may possibly be able to build a bomb sometime in the future. They may be working, or they might be working to build a bomb. That's all that the report said. But, of course, what you're being told by the mass media is Iran is going to have the bomb soon, and we're going to have to go to war. And ladies and gentlemen, we get into a war with Iran, there are going to be terrible consequences for everybody listening to this program. Somebody has to speak out against the militant policies of the neoconservatives who want to involve us in war after war after war. And if you want your sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters to go off to foreign countries to fight wars, remember, those who go overseas to fight wars for freedom often find they've lost freedom at home. And with that as a background, Buck Keeley, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I'll start by saying we've been having telephone issues out here, and if I'm breaking up or if I lose you, you'll know why. That they've got them repaired.
Okay.
But when you live on the edge of the civilization, that the lines get very thin when they come to us. So,
all right, anyway, fine. We'll just do the best we can. Hang on.
Betcha.
Okay. Well, of course, Buck, why don't you tell us a little bit about certainly what's going on? You say that you're having problems with your telephones locally.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
There's so much to learn about this and the growing crops. I really didn't know very much, but I honestly believe that we should learn about these things because so many of the prepared foods we're getting, so many of the foods we're getting in the stores are not safe. They've had all sorts of pesticides, insecticides sprayed on them, and certainly the ready-prepared dishes that you buy at your grocery stores are not safe for you. So basically, we have Buck on a regular basis. Now, he does support Radio Liberty, admittedly, but we'd like to have him on a regular basis to teach us about growing. And first, one of the things that he brings out is that there are specific zones, and you need to know the zone you live in because that'll determine, of course, when you start putting your crops out, whether you start them in the greenhouse, whether you can start them indoors, and actually when, of course, you'll want to actually put them outdoors. So you'll want to go to his website, seedcatalog.com, and then you can learn what zone you actually live in and then begin making your preparations. Buck makes the point that there are certain root crops you can begin getting ready for as far as your radishes and carrots and things of that sort. When, of course, will we begin to putting in those root crops, Buck?
Well, once again, depending on what zone you live in, as soon as you get, maybe 4 to 5 weeks before last frost, you can start putting in your root crops. And this year, if you're so inclined, a good time to put out early spring peas, you can put them out before spring comes. You can put out your garlic. This is a good time to put out garlic so that you have a good crop come fall time. And so there's things you can be doing. And if you've got any question about when things should be put out, if you'll go to our website at seedcatalog.com and click on any of the vegetables you're interested in planting, there will be a link on that site that will tell you what time you need to put it in the ground. And so it will kind of give you an idea how to plan your garden. But there's a lot of things you can be doing this time of the year, not just as you plant your seed, but, of course, this is a good time to be practicing your skill at sprouting seed. We've been having a lot of your listeners ordering sprout seeds from us and sprouting kits, and it's a fine time to be doing that as well. It's a good time to be doing indoor gardening, that if you have a windowsill that faces south, or if you have a patio where it's closed in, you can actually plant in winter time things like lettuce and even get some radishes out of things like that, even though it's cold out, as long as you have enough sun to touch those plants, that you can make some early green plants as well inside the house.
All right, fine. Now, Chris, the other thing that you've stressed on other programs is this is the time to be preparing the soil, which is really the key to gardening. And you should be simply preparing the compost. You should take all the soil out. If we've been doing, of course, gardening in planter boxes, and just empty those out on a big tarp, and then add a lot of things to it and cover it up and let it just sit there for a couple of months in preparation. How do people go about, what do they put into their compost pile, Buck?
The compost pile is really simple. It can be made more complex than it is, but it's really simple. What you're taking is organic matter. And a good rule of thumb is 90% brown and 10% green. The brown would be carbons and green would be nitrogen. So if you take your leaves that fall off of the trees, you rake them up, put them in your compost pile, you place in there cardboard or paper, even bark off of trees that's been shredded. If you've had any type of yard work done or if had any bushes that's been cut down, to chip those and put those in the pile. Cow manure goes well on there, chicken manure as well, and you mix that in, cover it up with a tarp, and about twice a month turn it over, put a little moisture on it. In a couple of 3 months, you'll have a pile of soil. We call it compost. One of your callers on one of our conversations talked about making soil, how that he had piled up a bunch of leaves. He came out at the end of the year and he had soil, and he didn't understand completely what was happening, but he basically was just composting. And composting is the number one thing you do to build your soil. Commercial farmers, commercial gardening, for those folks that are using the land to grow mass crops, in the soil, they feed the vegetables fertilizer. But for the best fruits, for the best vegetables, you want to augment your soil, then occasionally feed your vegetables. And the way that you augment your soil is through things composting and worm castings, animal fertilizer, animal manure, those kind of things, all natural, holistic type soil augmentations will give superior plant, not only in size and in appearance, but in taste and in nutrition as well. So this is the time of year you start building a compost pile. And like you were speaking, for you who do container gardening, if you're gardening in containers, it's a good idea that at the end of your growing season that you dump all your containers into one place to mix the soils together. Different plants place different demands on the soil and place different nutrients back into it as it grows. So you recombine that soil together, and then you augment that soil with your compost, and you refill your containers come springtime and then plant fresh and new, and you'll wind up with superior plants, superior fruit, and superior nutrients, and not be putting into your body those things that they're putting into the plants out there in the fields, and the fertilizers and weed control and insect control, that you're actually controlling the quality of the food that goes into your body.
And, of course, Buck makes the point that, for instance, with tomato plants, you can't be using that soil over and over again if it's in some sort of a container. You've got to get new soil in there, or after a couple of years, Roy, your tomatoes just don't come back the size that they were. And this is true of all of the crops. So this is the time of year to actually start making the compost, and so that by the time we get around to March or so, April, why you're going to have the soil that you can get things planted in. Now, what about getting tomato plants down at the nursery? Is this a good idea, or you're better off to grow your own?
Well, there's two things that would to growing your own. One is price, that for $1.85 to $2.15, you buy a package of our seeds, and it has 25 tomato seeds in it, which will plant 25 plants. So for less than $2, around $2, or 10 cents a plant, that you're going to have 25 tomato plants. If you go down to a nursery supply, a big box store or a nursery, you're going to pay for a 6-inch plant somewhere between $3.50 and $4.50 for that plant. Second is that that plant, unless you know the source of the nursery, whether or not that they are producing what we would prefer to have on the heirloom seeds, to where you're not getting genetically modified, you're not getting hybrid seeds, you're buying a plant that probably is not going to be sustainable, renewable, and it's been genetically designed for a specific purpose. So you're going to get an inferior plant that's going to cost you more for an inferior plant that's going to produce a fruit that'll be inferior in flavor, but will not be able to be sustainable and renewable. So the idea of going down and buying your plants already ready to go and in the containers is not a good idea for somebody who's wanting to grow the best garden they can grow. Second to that is most of the time those plants have been forced grown. That means that the nurseries have provided an environment that does two things. Number one, it takes seed and forces it to grow to a certain height and a certain dimension at a certain time schedule. That they sell all of these plants in a very short window of time, so they had to force plants to be healthy in their appearance and they'd be able to be resold and sold. But along with that, those plants generally have been on a truck for some period of time before they get to you. And so when they arrive at your retailer, that they douse them down with water and sometimes with fertilizer, but most times just with water. They'll saturate them with water, which will give them an immediate push, but it draws all the nutrients through the plant and it produces an inferior plant when you transplant it. So you're far better off buying a package of seed and taking an egg carton and putting some soil in there and putting the seed in each one of the containers in that egg carton. Keep it damp and let it grow until it gets about 4 to 5 inches tall. Cut the egg carton up in pieces and transplant that into a pot and let it set in the area that you've been growing your plants for another 2 to 3 weeks, and then transplant that plant into the ground. And you'll have a far superior plant if you do that for much less money.
Well, now, should we actually leave the plant in the cardboard, or should we take it out of the cardboard and put it directly in the ground?
The cardboard will biodegrade. The egg cartons are, if you wet them, they're biodegradable and they'll fall apart. And so if you keep that soil wet, the roots will grow right around and through it. The egg carton is only about an inch deep. And so immediately when you put it in the soil at the depth of about 3 or 4 inches, those start to grow through the soil and through that carton. So you leave it right in that egg carton and then plant that right into your garden, and it won't hurt a thing. And it doesn't disturb the roots near as much. One of the problems in transplanting plant material is disturbing the root structure as you move it from one container to another. And the egg cartons are very similar to a peat moss transplant container, where you place that into the soil direct and it biodegrades. And so by doing that, you don't disturb the root system, lets it have a healthier root system and a quicker response from the transplanting. So I just leave it right in the container, put it in the bigger pot, and it'll all be well.
Now, what about, when you put the tomato plants in the soil, should you be adding some fertilizer along with that, some of the diatomaceous earth and the other things that you talk about? Incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have any questions for Buck, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But when you are planting this, then, and transplanting the tomato plants, should you put fertilizer in the ground surrounding this, or should you fertilize it at a later time?
With the transplants, it's good once that you plant the seeds into your first container to have a nutritious compost soil that's 50-50, and it'll have nutrients enough to produce a good plant. And then when you transplant it into the ground, side dress it with an organic fertilizer.
Hold that thought. Okay, why don't you just tell us now, what sort of organic fertilizer should we be using?
That fertilizers, make sure that what you use...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
And, of course, then just cut this up. But you could actually leave a little cardboard right around the roots because this protects it. The water will dissolve the cardboard, but then you don't get the root shock. Now, if you're going to go to the big box store or when you're going to buy your tomato plants, which you're better off if you grow them yourself, but if you go down there, why do not get those that are blooming? If they are blooming and you transplant them, you're going to shock that and the plant may never recover properly. When you, of course, take the transplant the tomato plant, you take off the lower leaves and then you plant the plant much deeper, a couple of inches deeper down into the soil, because that gives more of the stem. The stem will grow off roots and it'll grow ever so much better. You, of course, put the fertilizer maybe 4 inches, 5 inches away, from the center of the hole all around the periphery. And then, of course, you fill in the area with soil. You water it down because you have to get the air out. If there's air around the roots, it'll kill the roots. So you have to put in the dirt. You have to water it. You have to press it down so there is no air around the roots so that the plant can grow. And Sydney, those seem to be the major issues. But remember, when you're buying the plants, do not buy those with the blooms on them, because if they have blooms on them and you transplant them, you're going to do a great deal of harm to your tomato plants. And I assume this would be true with anything else you're buying and transplanting. Would that be right, Buck?
That would be true, that anything that's in bloom, you do not want to try to transplant it. Once again, the nature of nursery growing is they force plants into maturity, and as a result, they prematurely bloom. Oftentimes, that these plants will sit on the shelves at the nursery at the big box store for quite some time before they sell, and oftentimes they're in transport for 4 or 5 days before they arrive at location, and so that they've matured to the point to where these plants now have become healthy, and they put on the blooms, and it's just it's hard to plant transfer when they're transferring energy from the plant to the blooms. So the ideal thing is to get the plants in the ground before they bloom so they don't deal with that shock. And if you're a container gardener like you are, Dr. Stan, one of the best ways to provide that exchange between being transplanted is to take the fertilizer you're using, whether you're using maybe a good compost or you're using a organic fertilizer or worm casing castings or rabbit manure or something like that, and make a tea out of it. It's not that difficult to do. What you do is you take about a pound of either fertilizer or manure. You put it in a 5-gallon bucket with about 3.5 gallons of water, and about 3 or 4 times a day, pour it back and forth between two buckets. What you're doing, you're actually aerating that soil or that manure or that fertilizer so that it allows the nutrients to transfer between the solid material and the water, and then strain out the solids and then use the liquid when you transfer to put on the plant. And you'll be amazed what you see as far as the difference in the quality of the plant, because you're providing, if you will, baby food for the plant. It's already pre-digested for baby food where they grind it up for the child. Well, what you're doing is taking the nutrients out of that media, whether it's a fertilizer or a compost or whether it's an organic fertilizer, and you're taking the nutrients and getting them to where they're directly able to be sucked up into the root system. And that is a wonderful way to advance plants when you transplant them, and particularly for container gardeners, that it provides an initial boost that helps your plants become mature and healthy at a more rapid rate. And if you do that during the time that you're going to fruit for your tomatoes, rather than putting in your solid fertilizers or your solid manures, if you'll make a tea out of it, pour it into those containers, you'll be shocked at the difference between your fruit by doing that and then just putting in standard applications, because you're preparing fertilizer to go directly into the root system.
Well, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Buck, how often should you be watering your plants? Should you do it every day? Should you do it every other day? Twice a week? How often, so that you don't damage the plants from overwatering?
Well, one of the main mistakes that beginning gardeners make is overwatering. And there's not a time factor on how often you water. It depends on the atmospheric conditions, whether you're in a low or high humidity, whether or not that you're hot or cool. So what you want to do is go down your soil about 3 or 4 inches. If it's not more, you want to water your plants, and you want to water them good.
Hold that thought.
Let us swear a This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
People are becoming more aware of the dangers of fluoride in their drinking water. We're offering you a proven way to remove more than 95% of this dangerous chemical which threatens your good health. It's the Whole House Fluoride Removal System, available right now from Radio Liberty. This system will also remove aluminum, manganese, arsenic, lead, and most heavy metals. Your fear regarding these dangerous chemicals in the water you drink can be eased by getting more information from RadioLiberty.com. Go to RadioLiberty.com right now and find out all you need to know about protecting your home's precious water supply. Read the information about the Whole House Water Fluoride Removal System and order one. Free shipping is included in every purchase. You can also call 1-800-544-8927. Where's that information? RadioLiberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927.
one triple eight two four liberty or four six four eight two nine five. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You have a question for Buck? Before we go on, Buck, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to order certainly one of your seed packets or some of your fertilizer or some of the other things that you are offering through your website.
So the easiest way to get to our website is to go to seedcatalog.com, all one word, type it into your address bar, seedblog.com. And also, on Dr. Stan's site, if you click on heirloom seeds, it'll take you to our website. That takes you to the front door of our website. There's a lot of information there for you to browse and read about heirloom seeds and the importance of not using genetically modified seeds or hybrid seeds. And then you click on shop for seeds, and it'll take you inside our store. And inside the store, you'll find our products are well organized. We'll sell a single packet of seeds, or we sell prepared packs of seeds, or we sell seed banks. And our single packs of seed are packed in glassine packs. They're a good portion for a garden in each pack, and it'll tell you how many seeds in each is one. Then we have our value packs, the small city garden or the urban garden or large garden. Each one of those have been designed to have a specific amount of garden space. A large garden will about 100 by 50 with a good cross variety of spring, early summer, fall, and late fall crops. And we have our lover packs for peppers and tomatoes and for herbs. And if you buy in the pack for about 30% cheaper than individual packs, obviously, because you're buying more product and it's easier for us to pack and ship it. And then we have our seed. We've been selling a lot of seed banks this past couple of months. And what a seed bank is where we put together seeds that will plant a survival garden. A half acre is in our personal seed bank. It'll plant a half acre garden of grain and of fruits and vegetables. And then our basic will plant an acre. And those packs gather in a mylar, heavy mylar that's sealed, keep out impervious to water and rodents and insects. And then placed in a PVC pipe and sealed. And by doing that, you can toss that into your freezer to keep the seed fresh longer, or dig a hole in your backyard and bury it where the ground will keep a constant temperature better, and it'll keep seed that will germinate for years. And so those are available for those who want to have a survival seed bank. I encourage one to have one. We have one. And then we have our sprouting kits and sprouting seeds. This time of year, we sprout a lot for fresh greens, and we'll have those there. And as well, we sell fertilizer, an organic fertilizer that will assist you as you begin to plant your garden. So that's what we have on our store site. And if you want to give us a call, we'll help you by telephone. Our toll-free number is 1-888-866-9132, 1-888-866-9132. You call that number during our business hours, and Miss Susan will be glad to help you make your selection and order your seed.
All right, fine. And if you have a question for Buck, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Barbara calling. Oh, Barbara, do you have a question for our guest?
No, actually, I don't. And I kind of back up. The one thing, Buck, I found years ago when I was able to do a lot more gardening was I would take, like, the little cardboard drinking cup. We built three 3 ounce sizes, and fill those with soil and put the seed in that, and then just put the whole thing in the ground, and it would just then the cardboard would just, you know, just kind of disintegrate, and then
And we've used that for, I remember back when I was in grade school, boy, that's been a long time ago. We did that as class projects.
Yeah.
And I still use those kind of containers. And what I do when I put them in the ground, Barbara, kind of help them, is I take a razor knife or a pair of scissors and I down four ways on it. And that opens it up so that it's able to draw nutrients beyond it. It's easier for the roots to slide out. And it's kind of like giving a plant a helping hand in those containers that doesn't biodegrade quite so easy. Those are suitable and accessible for doing your transplant. You don't have to go to the store and buy $50 worth of materials in order to have your plants that you can plant and transplant later on. Use what you have around the house and save the money.
Yeah. Well, you go down and like to, I hate to, you know, do any, you know, but anyway, at Costco, you can buy a huge container. If you can buy the plain one. And because now they have them kind of with colors on them, and I'm a little hesitant to do that. I don't know what.
Yeah, that.
But you know, if you can
I would be overly concerned about the ink on them. That it's mostly the ink is not toxic, particularly if it's on drain or on plant material product. But my thought is, why buy something when you have it around your house for free?
But these are, I mean, you can buy like for $250, you can buy about 100 and some of these things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else, Barbara?
Well, yeah, and then you can buy another one too. If people get catalogs, that it has a it's a wooden thing that, and you can use newspaper, and
yes.
But you can actually make your own. Containers that you can plant your seeds in, and then they go right straight in the ground too. It's just, you know, there's just so many various ways that you can plant things that don't take a lot of, you know, all of these very expensive containers that you need to, and you can plant all kinds of things and then just put them in the ground, and so you're not disturbing the roots, and they just keep on growing.
Yeah, I think that's very good. Anything else, Barbara?
No, that's all. What do you think, Buck, about that?
Well, I think it sounds like great, and I'm sure Buck agrees with that. Don't you, Buck?
Yes, that I think that we have been a throwaway society for so long that we think we have to buy everything. And I think it's good for us to look at what we have and use what we have mm-hmm. and find alternate uses for what's there.
Yeah. I agree, and I think that, Chris, our plea is begin preparing for difficult times. I do believe they're coming. I hope and pray I'm wrong, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
Great program. I keep learning all the time.
Well, I do, too.
I really appreciate it because I love gardening and growing our own things. I just wish I had more time to do it.
Well, maybe when your husband retires, well, anyway, God bless.
Thank you.
For those of you who don't know, Barbara's my wife. Let's go to Sandy, who's calling us from Tri-Cities in the great state of Washington. But before we get to Sandy, and once again, I would put our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. I just asked you about watering. How do we know when we should water the garden, Buck?
That your soil, when you dig down in your soil 3 or 4 inches deep, it's not moist. And I started to say before the break that one of the most common mistakes that novice gardeners make is overwatering. What that does is it whooshes the nutrients away from the roots down away. Second thing it does is encourage the roots to grow surface levels, diving for that water, so it actually hurts the root growth of your plant. I had one of your listeners call me earlier this spring, and he was beside himself with being anemic. He said, "You know, I do think I can, but these plants are just stringy and they're anemic. They're not going to put on fruit." And I asked him what he was doing for watering. He told me he was watering twice a day. He lived in Georgia, and he said I'm watering twice a day because it's so hot here. And I encouraged him to water every 2 to 3 days. Check the soil for the dampness, but saturate the soil. He called me back in 2 weeks, and he was shocked how well those plants had recovered just by getting the proper watering. By watering and saturating your soil, it forces the root systems to dive down deep. There, they're going to find better nutrients. They're going to find them on the surface level, and it'll provide them with a more healthy root system. We're going to grow thicker, heavier, longer roots. So water only as it's needed, 3-4 inches deep. If it's moist, when you water it, saturate it good so the water goes deep into the soil, 6 or 8 inches deep, and you'll have healthy plants. Tomatoes in particular do not like to be top-watered. That don't spray, don't put a sprinkler out in your garden and top-water your tomatoes. Groundwater them. Put the water directly to the ground, to the root system, and it'll give you a healthier plant. If not, you'll get leaf curl, you'll get brown leaves, spotted leaves. And we know that the leaves is where the photosynthesis takes place for the chlorophyll to be turned into the nutrients for the plant. And if those leaves are damaged and they're not healthy, you're going to get a less superior product. So in your tomatoes in particular, don't top water them, bottom water them. Oh. And if you have a source for,
go ahead.
If you have a source for water other than city water that's been treated with chlorine and other chemicals, use it. If you got a gutter on your house, get your rain barrel and cut your gutters into that rain barrel and use rainwater. If you have natural water where you have a stream or a creek or a pond of water, take water out of that. If you're on a well, you'll be better off than the city water. But when you put on your plants the treated water, particularly with chlorine, it's detrimental to your plants and new source of water. And if you're living in areas like we are, water's expensive in the city. And if you set up a couple of water barrels, you can gather almost enough water just off of your roof to water your plants for the growing season without costing anything from the city for the water. And like most cities, you're going to pay not just for the water that's coming out of the capital in your garden, but you're paying for the sewer, even though you're not using it, to be taken away. So use your water wisely, and if you can develop another source, please do that. You'll have a better plant.
All right, let's go to Sandy, who's calling us from Tri-Cities. Hi, Sandy. You have a question for Buck.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, I do have a question. I've been curious. I know that genetically altered stuff is really bad for your intestines, but what is the difference between genetically altered and hybrid? That's just a curiosity of mine.
Yeah, well, it's really simple. The hybrid is where they take two different plants and they crossbreed them. It's kind of like when they take rabbits or take dogs and they breed out breed. Like a white rabbit comes because they've gone through the process of hybridizing the animals. And so that tomato plant that's in hybrid and in a laboratory bred over and over to breed out a specific set of features. And most of the time in production tomatoes, it's three things. Number one, it's thick-skinned for shipping. Number two, it's to have a heavy meat where it won't bruise easy. And number three, that it has the ability to come fruit all at once. And so the hybrid seeds are seeds that have been bred out for specific characteristics. Genetically modified seeds are seeds that have been gene spliced, sometimes with animal genes, sometimes with plant genes. And the purpose of that is to breed out, they will breed a stronger, superior, more productive plant. For grains, Monsanto will genetically alter the seed for corn or for wheat that's mm-hmm. able to withstand large portions of herbicide. And mm-hmm. so it's a plant that's resilient to the herbicide, but it soaks it up like a sponge. And when they harvest that fruit, you're getting large portions of herbicide into your body because they've created a seed that's not affected by the herbicide. And on they actually have a bleeding rice now that they've been working on, that they've been genetically modifying, that's going to be able to replace red blood cells. Japanese have been working on that. But the genetically modified is where they've gene spliced. They've come in and they've altered the genetic structure with artificial means. And hybrid is where they have hybrid something through many steps to bring out certain characteristics.
Mm-hmm. And basically, when you hybridize something, well, you're using God's structure and you're trying to improve on it, but you're not changing the basic genetic structure.
Mm-hmm.
When, of course, you genetically modify, you're trying to improve on God, and you're trying to actually alter the whole genetic structure. And some of these things, you know, they're putting human genes into plants and plant genes into human beings. And I think this is an abomination. I think they're going to be terrible consequences. We have a book called Genetic Roulette by Jeffrey Smith. If you haven't read it, you really should. Going into the genetic modification of crops and things, and some of these create terrible illnesses in people. That information is being thoroughly suppressed, but don't you worry. Monsanto, which is really behind this, has a backup plan. And Monsanto mm-hmm. and the Rockefellers and Bill Gates and a few other people who believe in population control have actually created what they call the Doomsday Seed Bank with real, honest-to-goodness seeds as they came from God. It's up about 800 miles from the North Pole. It's off the coast of Norway. We call it the Doomsday Seed Plant Bank because mm-hmm. I think they want to be able to use that when they start in all over again.
You know, I can't help but wonder, Dr. Stan, about these genetically altered things, if they're not causing a lot of the allergies in people, because you think of corn as highly genetic altered, soy is, and you think of the different things that people have food allergies to, and then they turn around, they feed these grains to the cattle that have the milk and the chickens that have the eggs, and milk and eggs are very high allergy problems for people too. So I think they're doing a thunder.
I think you're absolutely right, Sandy. What was your comment, Buck?
One of the things you want to keep in mind as we talk about the seed, that the heirloom seed has the ability to reproduce the same fruit it came from. Mm-hmm. The hybrid seeds will produce something, but we don't know what that is, and it won't be what you had.
Right.
And the genetically modified, even if it does reproduce, they'll put in a doomsday gene that destroys any fruit from being produced. And so mm-hmm. that you want to grow for a lot of reasons. You want to grow heirloom plants for flavor, certainly for the quality of the plant, but also it's renewable and sustainable. You can regather those seeds and reproduce, as God does in his nature, the same plant time and time again. And you're not introducing into your body the substance that has forced on either the genetic modified or the hybrid that I read an interesting article this that in the Monsanto cafeteria for the workers, they have barred having GMO food. So they won't even eat what they produce.
They have what?
What
they,
was
that in the Monsanto cafeteria for employees? They have banned GMO'd food.
They banned Monsanto, banned the food for their employees, but not for you and I. And I believe it's very dangerous. We have this wonderful book. It's called Genetic Roulette. We also have a four-tape set on genetically modified food. We recommend them. They're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's a great big book. It's called Genetic Roulette. Covers everything, and then of course we have the four tape set on GMO foods. Read it, understand what they're doing. They're destroying, in my estimation, humanity. Sandy, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, that's great. Thank you very much.
God
I find
bless
the program and immensely.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
This radio station, and hope that you'll give serious consideration to learning about growing your own food. Now, I think we're in for very difficult times. I think we're going to see the beginning of the breakdown of the structure of our society. People say that's just fear talk. Well, maybe it is. I noticed at our local bank here in Santa Cruz, where we live, one of them now has their own guard. Never had a guard before, but they've been robbed twice in the last few weeks, so they have a guard. We're seeing the communities don't have enough police officers. They're having to lay them off because they don't have enough money to pay them. We're going to see this increasing with the fire departments. If you look and see what's happening over in Europe today, the whole structure of society is breaking down. And certainly Martin Weiss, if you haven't heard his latest presentation, it's really very well done, where he actually interviews people from Greece and from Italy and Spain, who will tell you an entirely different story than you're getting from the media. The structure of society is beginning to break down with the new austerity programs that are being forced upon the people of Spain and of Italy and of Greece and throughout that part of the world. And I think it's only going to get worse. I hope and pray that I'm wrong, but at least take this as a possibility and start making your preparations accordingly. How do we understand what's going on? Well, of course, you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you can't afford it, go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. Scroll down videos to the first offering. It's called The Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you can stand to watch me talk for 2 hours, we will explain to you exactly what's going on and who's behind it. You'll need to get, of course, my talk on The Dark Secret DVD, my talk on The Forbidden Secret DVD. Get these syllabuses that go with them to make sure I'm telling you the truth. Get our DVD talk on the World Revolution that contains my interview with Ambassador Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution. I get our talk, our interview with Professor Sutton back in 1980. It's called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, pointing out how we've funded America's establishment, Brotherhood of Darkness, call it what you will, has funded communism since its inception. Why? Because you need an enemy to draw people's attention away from where the real enemy is. The real enemy is not in Moscow or Beijing or in Havana, Cuba. The real enemy is at 5080 68th Street in New York City, the Harold Pratt House. I've been there, and of course we've researched this thoroughly, and if you read my book, you'll get the background. You certainly may want to get Professor Quigley's book, a liberal college professor who taught at Princeton and Harvard before he went to Georgetown University and met his most famous student, a man named Bill Clinton. And Professor Quigley explained to Bill Clinton how you get to be the President of the United States, how you become a Rhodes Scholar. You get, of course, associated with a small group of people who rule the world, and that's what it's all about. There is a small group, but if you'd like to have more information, well, of course, we have David Rockefeller's book, Memoirs. We're on page 405. He talks about the secret society that he and his family are part of, that is, of course, working against the best interests of the United States and conspiring, those are his words, not mine, conspiring with others to create a more a global and integrated society, one world. And then, of course, you want to get Barry Goldwater's book, Senator Barry Goldwater's book, No Apologies. We have second-hand copies of that. If you want, of course, go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 24 hours a day. I said that you can certainly hear our programs on the telephone. You can hear our programs on shortwave, on satellite, on stations across America. If you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. If not, please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I want to remind you of the views that are going to be expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they'll be the views of William Grigg, if my producer gets him on the line. So we do hope our producer will put in a call for William Grigg and Sydney. William, of course, is the was for many years the senior editor of the New American Magazine. Now, of course, he's the managing editor of Republic Magazine, which is doing an excellent job of getting information out. William has his own blog site, an excellent source of information will help to edify you. Of course, he's kind enough to help me. I'm just, I'm at a time and age where after writing a monthly newsletter for a decade and a half, we decided to turn this over to William Grigg. So you'll be reading his writings, the Radio Liberty newsletter. They've been excellent, and of course the last one is very, very good. But without further ado, let's go to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Tan, I'm doing well, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you this evening.
Well, what are we going to be talking about?
It's just a terrible thing, given that we're within a very intimate proximity of celebrating the Advent, that we have to talk about the lingering death, almost through terminal hospice care, of what had been a constitutional republic and some of the leading symptoms of its terminal illness. And what's happened over the last several days, of course, has been the final passage of the so-called National Defense Authorization Act, which includes a provision essentially destroying the principles enshrined in the Posse Comitatus Act, which would prevent the military from acting as a domestic law enforcement agency. It has redesignated the American domestic landscape as part of a battlefield. The so-called homeland has now become a battlefield. We have a provision which can be used to justify the arrest by military authorities and the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens as enemy combatants or suspected terrorists who are associated. There is a term that is pregnant with infinite mischief, associated with groups including but not limited to Al-Qaeda or any other designated enemy or terrorist combination. And this, of course, is a measure that would continue, if not complete, the destruction of the habeas corpus guarantee, the foundational civil liberties guarantee that goes back before Runnymede 1215, the Magna Carta. It was well known before the English barons compelled King John to affix his name to that parchment that set out a framework for the protection of certain inalienable rights that, of course, are part of our heritage, part of our legacy as people who partake of the Anglo-Saxon tradition of rights protected by common law. Habeas corpus is indispensable. What it means, of course, is that the government cannot simply detain somebody without bringing that individual before an independent judge and either charging him with a formal defined crime from a legitimate law or letting him go. This has been essentially destroyed by this measure. As soon as Mr. Obama fixes pen to parchment, signs this into law, what remains of the framework of our individual liberties has essentially been destroyed. And that is where we stand here within a few days of the Advent celebration of the year of our Lord 2011 AD.
And I think it's vitally important we understand that what we are doing, of course, in the name of fighting terrorism, this whole war on terrorism is as phony as a $3 bill.
Yeah.
There are only 50 allocated terrorists in all of Afghanistan. We're paying the salaries of 500,000 people over there to protect us from the 50 remaining members of Al-Qaeda. And this whole thing has been funded since inception by the CIA, the Pakistanis, and Saudi Arabians, and now we lose our freedom. Go right ahead, William.
It really is an Orwellian dynamic we're seeing here where, as George Orwell pointed out in one of his great essays, the trick, which is pulled by nationalist and statist peddlers of pornographically lurid official propaganda, is to convince people that their beloved homeland is eternally triumphant yet perpetually besieged, that we move from strength to strength and victory to victory, yet we are constantly menaced by a shadowy, never-growing number of enemies who are apparently infinitely powerful and bottomlessly cunning. And so when we find ourselves seeing this image of the ubiquitous terrorist and apparently the omnipotent terrorist being used to drive considerations of policy that involve repudiation of indispensable guarantees of liberty, we see that we're living in an Orwellian, if not trans-Orwellian, environment. It just amazes me that people who profess to be adults could pretend to take such things seriously. But that's where we stand right now. As another example of that same syndrome, just before going on the show, Dr. Stan, I received a phone call from a friend of mine who also hosts a radio program, and we were musing over the Sioux City, Iowa debate that occurred yesterday evening. And how bizarre it is that with the exception of Dr. Paul, who, of course, is the sole adult and apparently the sole rational and honest person on the stage whenever these candidates assemble, the rest of the Republican field has distinguished themselves by their bellicosity. In previous presidential campaigns, if you go back to 1916 or 1940 or 1964, and you're talking about Woodrow Wilson, FDR, and LBJ, respectively, or even for that matter, the 1972 presidential campaign, which happened toward the end of the Vietnam era, at a time when Mr. Nixon was authorizing the secret bombing of Cambodia and otherwise escalating the attack on Vietnam as a negotiating strategy to provide a decent interval before the betrayal of what had been an ally in the war in Vietnam. It was a horribly cynical, completely unjust war that had multi-level betrayals of everybody in one respect or another. But in each of those presidential campaigns, a president who was either involved in a war or plotting a war always made a point of positioning himself for re-election as an advocate of peace. So you had Woodrow Wilson promising that we were not going to have the United States involved in the European War. That, of course, was a lie. He and his handler, Colonel House, had been plotting to get the United States involved in that war since before there was a war, quite frankly, from what we know about the Philip Drew framework for power. And the blueprint that was followed
Hold by... Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is our guest, William Gregg. He's simply pointing out that there's very little new under the sun that you go back to. And the election in 1916, why, of course, Woodrow Wilson was promising that we would not go to war. The slogan he ran one was he kept us out of war.
Yeah.
And basically, of course, they were planning the war in 1916. We know that from all sorts of other sources of information. FDR ran in 1940 under the guise, you know, I promise you no American boy will ever fight on foreign soil. I hate war. Eleanor hates war. Even Little Fowler, that was his talk, hates war. And the American people believed him, because we got, of course, into the Vietnam War when Lyndon Johnson said, you know, why would we send our boys halfway around the fight world to fight communism when we have communism just 90 miles off the Florida Keys? Already they were planning on the no-win war in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Why was to be a great distraction so we could bring in the great society and socialize America? And, of course, the same thing had happened time and time and time again. Richard Nixon telling us he had a wonderful plan to bring peace in 1968, but he had no intention of bringing peace in 1968. In 1972, he said the same thing, but he kept the war going for another couple of years because it was a great distraction. You must understand that we were to focus our attention on what was going on in Vietnam and our boys going up Hamburger Hill and being slaughtered and pulling back and then turning it back over to the Viet Cong so we could send our boys up Hamburger Hill again to lose more of them so we could pull them back and so the Viet Cong could have it again so we could send them up Hamburger Hill. And this is what it was all about. We could have won the war in 6 weeks. We were not allowed to. I was personally told that by Ambassador William H. Sullivan, and who was Ambassador to Laos, a close friend of Henry Kissinger's, and certainly by General Lewis Walt, a four-star Marine general. They both said, we could have won the war at any time in 6 weeks. And in fact, Sullivan told me, I never understood why we didn't simply win the war in Vietnam. Well, he didn't understand that it was never a war. It was a phony distraction. And right now, of course, it's saying, oh, we have to, of course, do something about Iran so we can have peace. Go right ahead with it.
Yeah. What you're describing in Vietnam, of course, was a Sisyphean meat grinder. And that's pretty much the model that has been followed in subsequent engagements. I remember vividly how in 1991, when the bombing of Iraq began, and I, along with a number of my other friends who were movement conservatives or former Reaganauts, in my case, I was somebody who'd been a somewhat guarded supporter of Ronald Reagan during his presidency. I had been a very enthusiastic supporter of him in 1980, became somewhat disillusioned with him by about 1983 or so, but still had a certain guarded sympathy for him. But I remember in 1991 being told that this was going to be the cure for the Vietnam syndrome, that we were going to find a way of reestablishing our martial vigor by taking on the dread army of Saddam Hussein and, of course, a war machine that had been built with funding and material support from Washington during the Reagan administration, as it turns out. But I remember opposing that war vehemently for a number of reasons, not the least of which was the fact, and it appeared to me to be a fact at the time, and unfortunately, this opinion, which is not mine uniquely by any stretch of the imagination, has been vindicated tragically, is that as soon as we got involved in that struggle, we would never get out. We never have gotten out, and we're not getting out now. They're leaving behind a very heavy personnel contingent in various forward-deployed positions in a huge embassy the size of Vatican City, and they're retreating just beyond the horizon, so to speak, into Kuwait. They're staying in theater, and this is something that's going to persist into the foreseeable future. But once we got in, of course, we would never get out. And so you have this ebb and flow where there are escalations, pauses, and retreats, but there's never a clean end to any of these conflicts. It's become a self-sustaining facet of our political system and our culture at large. And what's happening now, of course, is that once again we're seeing that there's a buildup to a conflict with Iran, which has already started, I'm quite convinced, through proxies that are being controlled by the CIA and by Israeli intelligence. You really should know better in the case of the Israelis when they're dealing with this so-called People's Mujahideen group, which is a deranged Marxist cult that uses the forms and concepts of the Islamic religion as a way of organizing people for the purpose of carrying out an agenda which is purely derived from classic Marxist-Leninist terrorism. They're conducting operations within Iran right now and acting as a chum spreader of war propaganda about the supposed nature of the Iranian nuclear program. But it just strikes me as bizarre that given the history of the decent hypocrisy which has been displayed by presidential aspirants since 1916, when ever given the opportunity, they have postured as men of peace. Even people such as Woodrow Wilson and FDR, who obviously lusted and itched to get the United States involved in European wars, they made a point of winning re-election on the promise of peace. In 1964, of course, LBJ was somebody who was presiding over the escalation in the Vietnam conflict that had begun under JFK, was trying to frame Barry Goldwater, who was unfortunately somewhat more hawkish and bellicose than he should have been, trying to frame him as a threat to the peace that he, LBJ, supposedly was going to protect. You mentioned Richard Nixon's secret plan to end the Vietnam War in 1968, which consisted of 4 years of perfectly otios escalation that ended up with a thoroughly dishonorable so-called peace. And what's happened now is that the Republican field, with the honorable exception of Dr. Paul, have been making a fetish out of their bellicosity, making a fetish out of their desire to launch an aggressive war against Iran, which is a country which has never harmed us in any way, never threatened us. I should amend the statement they've not harmed us in any way by recognizing the seizure of the embassy in 1979, which was, of course, a crime that was a form of illegal retaliation against previous crimes that have been committed by the government of the United States against the Iranian people. That's one of the things that happens when you get involved in the game of intervention and nation building and co-sponsoring, what happens is that people get angry and they start doing things that are perfectly wrong and destructive by way of retaliation. That's what happened in 1979. There's no justifying the seizure of the United States Embassy any more than there was any justification for the overthrow of the Iranian government by U.S. and British intelligence in 1953. They never, by they I'm referring, of course, to the custodians of acceptable opinion here in this country, never, or at least very rarely, talk about the 1979 events in context. But what amazes me is that these people could go before microphones and go before the public television cameras and speak with horrifying candor about their intention to wage aggressive war against Iran, and they go so far as to say that there is something dangerous and untoward and perhaps unpatriotic about not endorsing aggressive war against Iran. I've been rummaging around for a parallel or a precedent in the history of Western electoral politics in which you would have people vying for a prominent executive position, or for that matter, a legislative position in a national government, in which their campaign would be built on the promise of waging aggressive war.
Well,
I can't think of an example of precedent, certainly not in American history.
Did you actually see the debate last night where Michelle Bachmann attacked Congressman Paul because, of course, she didn't want to offend America, and she was quoting the International Atomic Energy Commission report as saying that, of course, they had verified that Iran was working to build a nuclear weapon, and they could have it at any time, and we had to defend America. And Ron Paul said, that isn't true. Oh, yes, it is true. You know, that's what they said. And, well, of course, all you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, you can get it off the Internet. What did the International Atomic Energy Commission say? It said Iran might be enriching uranium to build a nuclear weapon. They might be. Nothing about they were going to have a weapon, you know, in 1 or 2 months or a couple of months. Nothing about that they were, they might be.
Yeah.
Those were their words. And Michelle Bachmann got up in front of the whole world and lied. And that, of course, I've always liked Michelle until last night. I'd certainly lost my respect for her. She's been taken over by the neoconservatives, and she's willing to compromise her integrity for their support. Now, she can say, well, I that's what I was told, that the International Atomic Energy Commission had said, well, she has an obligation before she goes on to television and challenges Congressman Paul to be sure she's right. And she wasn't right, and she was telling something that was frankly not true. What the commission said is they might be working to build a bomb. Go ahead.
I don't know whether we're dealing with somebody who is culpably dishonest or simply inept to the point of being less than responsible. Perhaps she could plead some form of diminished capacity here with respect to her understanding of what the IAEA said, or for that matter, what the CIA said. I think that it's entirely possible, Dr. Stan, that her misplaced certitude is a product of listening to the MEK, once again, the so-called People's Mujahideen Group, for which Michelle Bachmann has made public gestures of support, which, by the way, is, in a technical sense, a violation of federal statute and a felony, because under the current definition, and we've reviewed this before, Dr. Stan, of course, under the current definition of what constitutes material support for an identified terrorist group, urging the State Department to delist the MEK, which is listed right now as an international terrorist group, would constitute a form of material support for terrorism. And so when Michelle Bachmann, as she has done on a couple of occasions, has given public addresses endorsing the MEK, she's been committing a felony, and the MEK, once again, has been one of the chief manure spreaders for a lot of the propaganda about what's going on with the Iranian nuclear program. They have been saying that there is no doubt that Iran is developing an atomic bomb, and perhaps Michelle Bachmann was reciting from their hymnal rather than from the report put out by the International Atomic Energy Commission.
But basically what they're doing is they've targeted the Christian community. Oh, we're getting things all the time by books and by internet to convince the Christians that we've got to go to war to protect Israel. And what are we doing to Israel? Israel's facing a civil war today, ladies and gentlemen. The people of Israel are so furious with the government because it's been following American policy and driving them out of the settled areas. Go right ahead, would you?
With respect to what's going on.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
The Shah of Iran, and basically that the Shah had alienated the middle class by first doing so much to repress them. He did have a vicious secret police organization trained by America. Remember, America installed the Shah of Iran in 1953, kept him in power. I mean, provided him with money, provided him with the wherewithal to train his troops, to train his secret police, and then what it was the final straw that turned the middle class against the Shah?
What happened was that you had, as with the case in Nicaragua and a number of other countries that were nominally allies of the United States in the late 70s, later mid-70s, you just had a sense of embedded kleptocracy. And it's when people started to protest in the streets, sort of the same kind of thing we've seen with the protests against Mubarak, some of the same kind of things we've seen here, quite frankly, with the Occupy movement, where you had this this coalescing of grievances. These inchoate grievances started to coalesce into tangible form, and the Savak was unleashed on the protesters, and that created a revolutionary situation in which this grim-visaged and blank-eyed expatriate living in Paris by the name of Rollo Khomeini started to emerge as a dark favorite, sort of a dark eminence behind the scenes, precisely because people have been driven into the streets by by the economic ruination created through wage and price controls and the destruction of the middle class economy.
Now, you're talking about the Ayatollah Khomeini, the man who was living in Paris under CIA auspices, who was financed by the CIA, who was actually installed by the American CIA. What everybody's forgotten is the American Central Intelligence Agency back in 1979 installed a radical cleric. So I can remember thinking at the time, why in heaven's name would we overthrow a man, even though he was a tyrant, but he was ostensibly certainly pro-Western, he had a large army, and he was a stabilizing force. Why would we overthrow a man who was friendly to the United States and replace him with these radical clerics who obviously had certainly very little in common with the United States and would one day be a very, very dangerous enemy? In 1979, it didn't make any sense. In the year 2011, it makes a lot of sense. You create the best enemy that your own money could buy. This is what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. We've created this enemy, and they knew what they were doing in 1979. It's just the American people don't know even today. Go right ahead.
One of the things that happens, of course, is that you're dealing with people who were fungible tyrants. The Shah, as you pointed out, had been brought to power in 1953, and one of the things the CIA did, and I believe that Robert Dreyfus does a really good job of describing the tenor of the times in his book about the CIA's support for radical Islam. And then Stephen Kinzer, who's somebody who's ideologically not entirely on the same page with me, but who nonetheless has done a lot of research into the convolutions of American imperial politics. In his book, Overthrow, he talks about the same story. I mean, you got more than one source from more than one perspective talking about the same set of events. He talks about the fact that the CIA was going out and spreading money around to buy up the local radical imams in order to talk about the need to replace the democratically elected left-leaning president of Iran in 1953. They're the ones who helped bring the Shah to power, and the CIA went to the same playbook in 1978. There were the same clerics who were out beating the drums against the Shah, demanding that the CIA, the cosseted favorite, Ruhollah Khomeini, the Ayatollah Khomeini, be installed as the spiritual leader of Iran. And so you've got basically a case where the CIA pulls the chain on its previous favorite. But before all this happened, you take a look once again in 1973, 1974, when you had Henry Kissinger running the executive branch with Gerald Ford as the figurehead. You can see correspondence where the Iranian government makes it pretty clear that under the Shah, they were developing a nuclear capacity. They had the support and material assistance of Washington as well as Paris. And they were probably at the time collaborating under the table with some elements of the Israeli government as well for reasons of realpolitik. But the Shah made it very clear that he was pursuing this not for energy, but for weaponry. So that the Iranian nuclear program actually has been more than 40 years in the making, and it was supported by Washington in its earliest phase, and now it's being used as a casus belli by the Republican lineup, except for Ron Paul.
And basically what is happening, there's an organized effort to convince the American people that we have to protect Israel, and we're going to protect Israel by, of course, going to war with Iran. Basically, of course, I think that Ron Paul is absolutely right. We should stop funding Israel so they can look after their own interests. It's because we put pressure on them that they've pulled out of Gaza and turned it over to the PLO, that now there is a civil war brewing in Israel because of America's pressure on Israel. Let them be free. Go right ahead.
While storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance.
William, you go right ahead.
It's interesting you bring up the fact that what's happened in Gaza in the last 4 or 5 years, about 2006, is that you have a government that was installed with the help of the United States that is really misruling the Palestinians and, you know, creating a huge bleeding sore there that benefits nobody. It's in microcosm the same sort of thing that's been going on in that region of the world for decades now. And one of the things that has happened is that Ron Paul, God bless him, not a perfect man, not a perfect candidate by any stretch of the imagination, but at least he's candid in principle. And he's sincere, and he's in possession. one face, which is a refreshing attribute in any human being, almost impossible to find among politicians. He points out that what's going on in the Middle East right now is all a result, not all, but for the most part, the things that most concern us are the result of intervention in the affairs of that region. And he wants to reinstitute the founding foreign policy of the American Republic, which is to have commercial relations with all and to have entangling alliances with none, and let Israel look out for its own interests and let the other countries of the region do likewise. And for saying this, he's being excoriated as an extremist, just as he's being called a dangerous and perhaps unhinged human being because he is not possessed of a visible, palpable desire for an aggressive war against Iran. And again, Dr. Stan, I just find this remarkable that for the first time in my memory, and the first time I've been able to find in the historical record, you have American presidential candidates making the desire to go to war overseas against a country that has never committed an act of aggression against the United States, with the exception, once again, of the retaliatory attack on the embassy in 79, which cannot be defended. But they're talking about going to war against Iran on the basis of completely faulty or misrepresented intelligence. They're making this their campaign. I'm really at a loss to find a precedent, a previous example in American history where this has been somebody's stumbling point as a presidential candidate. Usually it's been exactly the opposite. But we've reached, once again, sort of a trans-Orwellian juncture in our decline into abject tyranny, which is appropriate given the fact that on Bill of Rights Day 2011, the Senate repudiated the Bill of Rights by passing this Indefinite Military Detention Act. It once again, is something that's casting a pall on the celebration of the advent of our Lord, but such is the tenor of the times in which we live. And I don't think that things are going to be getting noticeably better anytime soon.
I'm afraid you're right. I'm going to be back in just a moment, Chris, William Craig, as we analyze what is really going on today. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening with William Craig. And William, before we go on, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they could get to your website, they could learn more about Republic Magazine, and they could get, of course, to your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I really do appreciate that. And I want to take this opportunity because I do know that many people in your audience are among those who've been contributing to me by way of my website, Pro Libertate, to thank you for your help in persuading people to impart of their substance to help me and my family, and also to thank them for their generosity. And over the last couple of weeks, there have been a number of people who've responded with remarkable generosity to a fundraising appeal I put on the Pro Libertate blog a couple of weeks ago. And I intend to thank each one of them individually. Every donation that people have given has been very helpful. They're all very much appreciated. And I once again find myself humbled and very grateful for all the help that we've received. Pro Libertate, the blog, is my chief outlet still, and it's found at Freedom in Our Time, one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or to go there directly by way of a search engine, you can type in Pro Libertate, L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, Pro Libertate, my last name, Greg, and the first return should be the Pro Libertate blog. I post there one or two times a week, usually an essay about 2,000 words in length, and one of the reasons why I've cut back one or two times a week rather than three or four is because I'm also involved, as you noted, Dr. Stan, as the managing editor at Republic Magazine, which can be found at republicmagazine.com. That's both a hard copy journal and a very busy web presence. Republicmagazine.com contains videos, and I've been posting links to audio interviews, podcasts, and radio interviews that I've been doing. And also, of course, there's a news section which is updated either daily or every other day, an article or two between 600 words or as many as 1,200 words or longer, depending upon the subject. For instance, on December 7th of this year, the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, there was a very lengthy historical review piece about the Pearl Harbor deception and what is now, in my opinion, and the opinion of people who study this to a far greater depth than I have, the established and irrefutable fact that not only did FDR have prior knowledge of the attack on Pearl Harbor, but it was something that he and his handlers had orchestrated to the best of their ability. And there was a terrific piece by Pat Buchanan, by way of a book review, of Herbert Hoover's memoirs of the duplicitous diplomacy of the FDR administration, the monthly of the Pearl Harbor, showing how at every juncture, the FDR administration consciously stiff-armed entreaties and overtures and feelers that were put out by a peace party within the Japanese government that was looking to back away from its conquest in China, to repudiate the territorial aggrandizement of the Japanese imperial government, and to avoid what would be, as many of them knew, including Admiral Yamamoto, a destructive war with the United States. FDR stiff-armed that. He wouldn't settle for anything other than wouldn't settle for anything other than a scenario that would lead to war with Japan as a backdoor to war in Europe. And in this article, I point out that there was a parallel track of diplomacy that the FDR administration was following with respect to Nazi Germany. This is documented in a terrific and, I think, sadly neglected book by Thomas Fleming. Not the Thomas Fleming who runs the Rockford Institute, who's also an estimable and accomplished historian in his own right. This is Thomas Fleming, the popular historian and a wonderful and best-selling author. About 8 or 9 years ago, he put out a book called The New Dealer's War, which talks about the fact that there had been back-channel diplomacy going on between Berlin and Washington, and a group of people who were working to overthrow Hitler were trying to work out some arrangement where they could receive some kind of support, some kind of diplomatic support, and if necessary, some kind of material assistance from Washington. And this is something that FDR simply would not allow to happen. And these, once again, are symptoms, if you will, facets of the same type of mindset where FDR hypocritically said in 1940 he was going to do whatever he could to keep the United States out of war. Well, that apparently didn't involve any kind of creative diplomacy toward that end. But this is an article, Pearl Harbor at 70, FDR's Deception in Perpetual War, that was posted on December 7th at the Republic Magazine website, republicmagazine.com. Once again, just to give your listeners a flavor of the sort of things they can find at Republic Magazine, the website, in addition, of course, to the back issues, which are accessible, and you can go to the website and sign up for a digital subscription. The current headlines, I'll go down them just to give a flavor of the publication, are the following. A Homeschooling Mother's Resistance. Two courtroom victories for Marianne Godboldo, but government persecution continues. We've talked about the Marianne Godboldo case. She is a wonderful woman, professor at a local university, a local college, forgive me. She's an associate professor at a local college in Detroit with a 14-year-old daughter who suffers from a number of physical handicaps and some psychological problems. In March of this year, CPS team showed up on her doorstep with a group of local police to take the daughter into custody because the mother had taken this young girl off of Risperdal, which is a horrible, horrible pharmaceutical that was having noticeable deleterious effects on the well-being of this young girl. Marianne Godboldo, God bless her, refused to turn over her daughter because, first of all, she was not going to allow her daughter to be forcibly drugged if she possibly could avoid it, and secondly, because the paperwork wasn't in order. They didn't have, even by the definitions followed by these people, legal authorization to take this girl. So you had a 12-hour standoff. At one point, a SWAT team was mobilized to deal with this recalcitrant mother. Eventually, she surrendered. The daughter was taken away and forcibly drugged, but then taken off the drugs by the same people who said that it was a form of culpable neglect for the parent to make this decision. Well, she had been put upon charges, 5 felony charges, including aggravated assault with a weapon because she supposedly fired a gunshot at the people who were trying to kidnap her daughter and resisting police and so forth. Well, all those criminal charges have been dropped. You've had, just in the last week, 2 courtroom victories where 2 different judges have ruled in favor of Marianne Godboldo. But nonetheless, the child snatcher bureaucracy in Detroit is determined to try to find some way to break up the family. That's the lead article right now at republicmagazine.com. And there are a couple of other stories here dealing with other aspects of our garrison state. Unfortunately, that's a target-rich environment. There are 2 radio interviews, actually 1 radio interview and also a podcast of a radio program I did earlier this year, dealing with various aspects of the police state. There's a piece here called Plundering America, Cops Acting as Robbers Squabble Over the Loot, that deals with civil asset forfeiture. And then there's a piece here about the European Union Summit, the creation of the new European Soviet. Once again, all this is at republicmagazine.com. I'd urge your readers to go check it out. I think they'll find that this is a wonderful news outlet. Once again, you mentioned Dr. Stan. My blog, Pro Libertate, does have a PayPal account, and it's accessible by way of a button, a clickable button at the bottom of every essay. And I am, once again, extremely grateful for the generosity that's been displayed over the last couple of weeks. It's, quite frankly, rescued Christmas for me and for my family. And for that, once again, I offer my humble thanks.
All right, fine. Well, let's get back then to what's going on over as far as Iran is concerned.
Well, I actually, by way of springboarding off the subject of Iran, because we're talking here about perpetual war, Iran's, of course, merely the most recent target of opportunity. And as we pointed out in the previous segment, Dr. Stan, this is a case where decades ago, the people who very thoughtfully arranged wars for our supposed benefit took in hand the task of installing a dictator on the Iranian peacock throne and then overthrowing him about a generation later. And now a generation after that revolution, we find ourselves at the brink of what would be a horrible, destructive, catastrophic war. Even if it turned out to be a successful one, I would use shock quotes around the term successful, because I just don't see how any good could come out of it. It would still destroy what remains of the international economy, the global economy, at a time when it's extremely fragile. But this is all about perpetual war, which, of course, is the framework that defines everything that goes on in our domestic politics right now. And he would also make mention of the indefinite military detention provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act. I believe it's Section 1861 of that measure. And this is going to land on President Obama's desk just before Christmas. It was finished, passed on Bill of Rights Day with that diabolical symmetry and gift for sort of perverse irony that we see so frequently when the people who are involved in passing horrible bills like this make sure that they do so in a way that seems to coincide with significant anniversaries, just if only to stick a thumb in the proverbial eye of those of us who are paying attention. Well, what's happened is that the homeland has become a battlefield. And this is not a metaphorical thing. And one story here on the Republic magazine website is a really good illustration of this. And this is something you might have discussed earlier this week, and that's the case of the Brossard family in Lakota, North Dakota, actually. They live in, I believe it's called Williams Township, which is not even a fly speck on a map of North Dakota. This is a farm family. I believe there are six or eight people in there, maybe more than that. Rodney Brossard, 55-year-old farmer, has, I believe, six children. I don't know how many grandchildren they have there. He has three adult sons, I'm aware of, and I think an adult daughter. And they've had trouble from time to time with the county commission and with the land use planners and with the local sheriff's department, sort of thing that happens in a lot of rural areas in the United States. He was put on trial in 1996 for improving his own property in a way that local land use planners thought was not permissible under state law. He was put on trial. The jury ruled against him. He appealed it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court threw out the conviction. That was, I think, the first trouble he had here. And it wasn't because he'd been doing anything that injured anybody else. As it turns out, he wasn't doing anything illegal. Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, he was trying to improve a stretch of road in order to give him better access to his property. And somebody called the sheriff and said, he's out working on the road. This isn't permissible. The county commission says you can't be working on these roads. They're public access roads. And the sheriff sent out a couple of deputies, and words were exchanged, and the sheriff's deputies decided they would have to handcuff him while they wrote him a ticket. He didn't cooperate, so they threw him to the ground and used a mandibular joint technique, which is a pain compliance technique, to handcuff him, and he was charged with disorderly conduct, which, as far as I'm concerned, is not really a crime. It's a cover charge, and also with resisting arrest or preventing arrest. The disorderly conduct charge was thrown out. The preventing arrest charge was something stuck. He appealed it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court didn't rule in his favor, but it looks like the act of preventing arrest consisted of him simply tensing his arms when they tried to handcuff him. So you're dealing here with somebody who's got a bit of history with the sheriff's department. Well, in June of this year, half a dozen cows wandered onto this guy's property. I don't know, because I've not been able to get in touch with him. He's not going near his phone. I've left a number of messages for him. He's been burned by just about every reporter, so I don't doubt that has some relevance here to the reticence he's showing me. Half a dozen cattle wandered onto his property, and under the century code, the state code of North Dakota, as I read the livestock provision, these would be considered estrays. And under estray law, what happens is that if property damage ensues, you get to destrain. These are archaic words from Anglo-Saxon antiquity, basically. To destrain means simply to confiscate or to seize or to hold the cattle until you get satisfaction for the property damage. So he wasn't at fault. The cattle wandered onto his property. He was holding them until he was able to get satisfaction. The sheriff showed up, once again, sheriff's deputy showed up, and they wanted him to turn over the cattle. He said, well, wait a second, there's a process we have to go through here, and as I read the state livestock laws, you don't get to take the cattle until I've gotten satisfaction for the people who own these cattle for the damage to my property. Once again, words were thrown back and forth. He ends up getting tasered and arrested. His daughter, who had come to his defense, got arrested for supposedly assaulting a police officer. His wife was arrested when she wouldn't cooperate with them to help them find the family's firearms and confiscate them. So the three of them were arrested and taken downtown. The following day, the sheriff's deputies show up again, and this time they're greeted on the Brossard family's property by the three adult Brossard sons who are carrying rifles on their own property. This scares the deputies away. They go back and complain to the sheriff. The sheriff calls the Department of Homeland Security, which contacts the Air Force base in Grand Forks, and has them task a Predator B drone to conduct an overflight of this man's property from 2 miles in the air so that they're able to determine if these three adult sons are armed. And once they've confirmed that they were unarmed, they send in a SWAT team, they send in the state police, they mobilize fire and emergency vehicles to cut off roads. They conducted basically a full-spectrum military response in order to take these three guys into custody because of words they had exchanged with sheriff's deputies over a dispute that has to do with six cattle which were on this guy's property that shouldn't have been there. So they bailed themselves out of jail. They spend the next several months in what the media breathlessly called a standoff, which consisted of these people minding their own business and farming their corn and soybeans, and the media talking with the Southern Poverty Law Center and chumming the waters here for a conflict that could have been every bit as ugly as Ruby Ridge or Waco. And the sheriff was saying that these people have, he said, this is his verbiage, we've been able to associate them with a man named Roger Elvick. Who's Roger Elvick? Well, he's somebody who spent some time in prison because he'd been involved in the sovereign citizen movement and had been convicted of fraud. He just briefly lived in Lakota, which actually isn't the same place where these people live. They live in Williamstownsport. But because he had lived within a geographic proximity of these people, and because he was an identified member of a group the SPLC calls Domestic Terrorist Organization, the sheriff was able to associate these people, and that helped provide the juice that led to the use of a Predator drone for the first time that we're aware of in American domestic law enforcement. A Predator drone was used to assist the arrest of people who are now facing terrorism charges. They're charged with terrorizing the sheriff and the deputies by their noncompliance. So you have a microcosm here of how the homeland becomes a battlefield, and how perfectly innocuous people, they may be eccentric, they may be crusty, they may be curmudgeonly, they may not be good neighbors, I don't know. But they're certainly not terrorists, and for heaven's sake, they're not Al-Qaeda. But nonetheless, these people were targeted for a surveillance operation that included the use of the same Predator drone technology that has been used overseas in Yemen and elsewhere to conduct missile strikes, including the lethal missile strikes against Anwar al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son. So there we are in the year of our Lord, 2011, a couple of weeks away from Advent, less than a couple of weeks away from Advent. We have a situation here where somebody who is a corn farmer in North Dakota can be targeted for drone surveillance and accused of terrorism because he wouldn't turn over cows that he probably had a legal right to keep until his property damage was cared for.
And whatever has happened as far as the cows, do we know?
I
I've not been able to find out yet. That's another part of the story I'm going to follow up on.
All right, we hope you will, but I think we're going to see more and more of this as people begin to become angrier and angrier with government, just exactly as taking place over in Israel today, where you actually have the beginning of a civil war in Israel. People, of course, opposing the authoritarianism of the government there. Well, William, we've got three minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, once again, it's always a pleasure and a blessing to be with you. I really appreciate it.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.